art, live music, cider, wine, and snacks. Heck yeah.
Come out to KBOO's first ever First Friday Art Walk event on June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. The First Friday Art Walk is in Portland's vibrant Eastside Arts District and is the gateway into Portland's thriving arts culture, including more than 23 independent galleries.
Start your night off at the KBOO Studios next First Friday, June 7th. KBOO is featuring the work of two brilliant artists, Justin Auld and Amy Kutab. There will be live music, snacks, wine available thanks to Hip Chicks Do Wine, and cider courtesy of Cider Riot.
You will also get a chance to tour our studios. Check out KBOO.fm for more info. That's Friday, June 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. See you there.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Good in the Hood, the weekend of June 21st through 23rd at King School Park in Portland. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music, art, and food festival celebrating diversity and connecting people with resources and experience to strengthen the unity in the community.
The Good in the Hood parade will take place Saturday starting at North Williams and North Russell Street at 11 a.m. and KBOO will be broadcasting the festival live on Saturday starting at 2 p.m. and Sunday starting at noon. Again, that's Good in the Hood Friday, June 21st from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday, June 22nd from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday, June 23rd from noon to 10 p.m. at King School Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is now 6:01. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a new master's degree in nonprofit leadership for those who believe in the power of collective action for social justice or social change. For more information, online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we welcome back to the show the co-founder, Dr. Peter Phillips, political sociologist and author of Giants, the Global Power Elite. On this program, Peter will be in conversation with William I. Robinson, author and sociologist. He has a recent article out, Global Capitalist Crisis and 21st Century Fascism, Beyond the Trump Hype. So the theme for the hour today with Peter Phillips and William I. Robinson will be on the transnational capitalist class and growing global crises. Stay with us.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are rejoined for the hour by the co-founder of the Project Censored Show, Dr. Peter Phillips. We're going to, of course, be talking about his book, Giants, the Global Power Elite. We are also rejoined by William I. Robinson, who wrote the foreword for Peter Phillips' book, Giants, the Global Power Elite. But let me give a more proper introduction for both of our guests today, even though that they are known to the Project Censored audience. Peter Phillips has been professor of political sociology at Sonoma State University since 1994. He was the director of Project Censored from 1996 to 2010 and president of the Media Freedom Foundation from 2003 to 2017. He has been editor or co-editor of 14 editions of Censored, co-editor with Dennis Liu of Impeach the President, The Case Against Bush and Cheney, all on Seven Stories Press, the editor of two editions of The Progressive Guide to Alternative Media and Activism. He was co-host of the weekly Project Censored show here with me on Pacifica Radio from 2010 to 2017. Peter, a political sociologist, teaches political sociology, sociology of power, sociology of media, sociology of conspiracies, and investigative sociology. He was winner of the Firecracker Alternative Book Award for Best Political Book in 1997, the Penn Censorship Award in 2008, the Dallas Smythe Award from the Union for Democratic Communications in 2009, and the Pillar Human Rights Award from the National Association of Whistleblowers in 2014. Peter Phillips, welcome back.
Thank you, Mickey.
Peter, it's great to have you back on the show, and I'm very excited also to introduce William I. Robinson again. We all did a show a few years back, and I'm delighted that we have William Robinson back on the program today. William Robinson is professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's also affiliated with the Latin American and Iberian Studies program there with the Global and International Studies program. He's previously published 7 books, including the award-winning Promoting Polyarchy, it's out Cambridge, 1996, A Theory of Global Capitalism, 2004, and the award-winning Latin America and Global Capitalism, 2008. He's published some 50 articles in academic journals such as Sociological Forum, Theory and Society, International Studies Review, and many, many more. He is also a member of the editorial board of 15 academic journals. So Robinson, most recently, is author of Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism by Haymarket, that's just out here this year, and also an article very recently in Science and Society, and we're going to talk about some of this today. It's in volume 83, April 2019. The article is Global Capitalist Crisis and 21st Century Fascism, Beyond the Trump Hype. William Robinson, welcome back to the Project Censored show.
Pleasure to be on.
So, Peter Phillips, let's start with you. And William I. Robinson gave us quite a title to kick off from. And Peter Phillips, you're now doing research on a follow-up to Giants, the Global Power Elite. But we are in a global capitalist crisis, and we are seeing iterations of a 21st century fascism.
Well, that's certainly what William had been writing about in his most recent article. We're looking at a global police state, an emerging transnational empire of power with the U.S. and NATO with 1,000 bases worldwide, and then in-depth connections with police states and nation states all over the world. William, what do we mean by the crisis of capitalism in the 21st century?
Well, there's two big dimensions to the crisis that we want to highlight. One is what we call the crisis of overaccumulation. Global inequalities have never been as extreme as they are in 2019. The listeners will be familiar with these statistics at this point. 1% of humanity controls over 50% of the world's wealth. 20% of humanity, that's the population which is affluent enough to survive in global capitalism, has 94.5% of the world's wealth. And that means 80% of humanity has to make do with just 4.5% of the world's wealth. That's, of course, a crisis of survival for humanity, but it also means a structural crisis for global capitalism, because the global economy can churn out an incredible amount of goods and services and wealth, but the global market cannot absorb that wealth because of inequality. So that's the structural dimension to the global crisis. And you bring that home very well, Peter, in your recent work on the new global imperialism. You point out that the system has intensified imperialist intervention and militarization in order to open up opportunities to unload that surplus and to continue opening up profit-making and accumulation opportunities for profit-making and accumulation. So that is one dimension of the crisis, that structural dimension of overaccumulation. But here I want to mention the other, which is also a political crisis. States around the world are facing crises of legitimacy and of hegemony, because these states cannot meet the needs of their populations inside each country. So we have this political crisis as well. And it's timely, this interview that we're doing, because the elections were just held in Europe for the European Union Parliament. And what did we see in those elections was the two big winners were the extreme right, a neo-fascist right, on the one hand. That was the biggest winner. And on the other hand was the left, particularly the Green Party. So we're seeing this polarization worldwide between a resurgent right, far fascist right, and a resurgent left. and that is two different responses to the crisis of global capitalism. Unfortunately, the stronger response at this time is the far-right neo-fascist response, and that's what we really need to address urgently.
How much is Trump a part of this far-right phenomenon that's going on worldwide? Is he symbolic of what's happening?
Trump is symptomatic. Obviously, Trump has most of the headlines worldwide. Trump is the head of the strongest nation state in the world. But Trump is just a reflection of the far-right political response to the crisis, perhaps the most important symbolic or symptom of this far-right response. But this isn't limited to Trump at all. I mean, we just spoke about Europe, throughout Europe, in 15, 16 countries in Europe, the far right is an insurgent force. In several countries, such as Hungary, Poland, and elsewhere, it's actually, and Italy, it's taken actual power. But all around the world, in Latin America, the left resurgence in the early 21st century is over now. The right is once far right, fascist right, once again in command. It's in power in Colombia, in Brazil, in Honduras, throughout Asia, North Africa and the Middle East, Turkey, Israel. We see this all over. So yes, Trump is very central to the story of the rise of a neo-fascist, what I call 21st century fascist project. But it's a worldwide phenomenon, and that should not be surprising because the crisis of global capitalism is worldwide. And I would add also, by the way, that I just finished a new manuscript. It won't be out for another year, but it's titled Global Police State. And in there, I'm discussing that the far neo-fascist right is forming a fascist international. So there are these linkages being woven between Trumpism and the fascist forces in the United States with the European 21st century fascist forces, the Latin American forces, and so forth. So we really need an international of the left and progressive forces, and we need to form a united front against global, transnational united front against fascism.
So, William Robinson, you kick off your piece in Science and Society with a great epigraph from Antonio Gramsci that sums up here what you were saying. But this is a prediction, really, quite prescient. Gramsci writes here, "The modern crisis is related to what is called the crisis of authority. If the ruling class has lost its consensus, i.e. is no longer leading but only dominant, exercising coercive force alone, this means precisely that the great masses have become detached from their traditional ideologies and no longer believe what they used to believe previously. The crisis consists precisely in the fact that the old way is dying and the new cannot be born. In this interregnum, a great variety of morbid symptoms appear." Well, are we there yet, William Robinson?
Well, Gramsci is incredibly prescient. Of course, he wrote those lines some 90 years ago.
Exactly.
When fascism was taking power in Italy, but he could be describing 2019. Now, here's the thing. It's a mistake to say we are now in a 21st century fascist world. It's a mistake to say that we have fascism already in power in the United States. The thing is that we have the rise of these 21st century fascist movements and parties. And as I mentioned, in many states around the world, they've gained a presence inside the state. But we're not yet there. It's that interregnum that Gramsci was referring to. We're in this moment of uncertainty, a moment of great fluidity. And it's at this time, therefore, because of this fluidity, that collective political agents exercise great influence. And that's why it is so important to have an agency on our side, on the left and the progressive side. But you raised another issue by referring to the Gramsci quote there. And it is that both that 21st century fascism, unfortunately, does have a mass social base. And we need to analyze why that is so, because if we want to pull that social base away from the fascist project and bring it into a leftist project, we have to understand it. And this, in turn, is linked to the structural crisis and the crisis of hegemony we were talking about. Because as the mass of humanity becomes ever more destabilized and faces ever more rising levels of insecurity, they turn to some alternative to try and gain some security and some possibility of survival. And it's there where the neo-fascist agitation and the neo-fascist message of channeling these mass anxiety into scapegoats, such as immigrants and refugees in the United States, such as the Muslim minority in India, the Palestinians in Israel, refugees in Europe, etc. The strategy of scapegoating and channeling mass anxiety at the crisis towards the scapegoated communities is the basis of the 21st century fascist project of constructing a social base. And we, in turn, need to wrest away that mass would-be social base of 21st century fascism and bring it into a left and progressive project that emphasizes, above all, redistribution and popular power from below. That, again, is our challenge. One other thing here. There's a lot of talk now about fascism, and we're talking about it, of course, but there's also a lot of debate. And one of the responses I hear is that we can't have 21st century fascism because it doesn't look like Europe did in the early 20th century. And that is entirely correct. But we want to therefore distinguish between 20th and 21st century fascism, and the article you mentioned and also my new book Into the Tempest goes into considerable detail. And I want to mention quickly a few key distinctions. Fascism is a response to crisis. It was in the early 20th century. It is now. But remember that now we're in a globalized age, the age of globalized capitalism. So early last century, and Gramsci was noting this in Italy, and other people noted it in Germany. Fascism involved a fusion of far-right reactionary repressive political power in the states with national capitalist classes. They combined, they fused in the fascist project, and then they fought each other. But now in the 21st century, we have globalized capitalism, so what you see is the fusion of this far-right reactionary repressive power, such as Trumpism, with not national, but transnational capital. So this new 21st century fascism is an expression of the dictatorship of transnational capital. And secondly, and this is really important, is that in the early 20th century, the key social base of fascism was what is known as the petty bourgeoisie, middle classes, small shop owners, farmers. And these were a significant portion of society back then. They were displaced by the capitalist crisis of the early 20th century, and they formed a social base. But now what is the social base for fascism? And this is where we can see it in Trumpism, for instance. The social base is sections of the working class, such as white workers, the better off, more stable workers, that have been destabilized by capitalist globalization. And they're buying into the demagogy of the neo-fascist right. And finally, I mentioned there's some key distinctions. The third distinction I want to point out here should be obvious for listeners, is that early 20th century fascism was aimed at crushing very powerful working classes and the socialist movements, which were very powerful. But this time around, the worldwide socialist movement and the trade union movement is at an all-time weak point. So fascism is above all now aimed at coercive exclusion and repression of what we can call surplus humanity, that 80% which is increasingly excluded and locked out of global capitalism. So all of these symbols of 21st century fascism, mass incarceration, prison industrial complexes, anti-immigrant campaigns and deportation regimes, policing, so forth and so on, the new surveillance systems, it's aimed above all at coercively controlling the real and also the potential rebellion of that surplus humanity.
I'd like to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. I am joined on today's program by my former co-host, Dr. Peter Phillips, professor of sociology, author of Giants, the Global Power Elite. We're also with William I. Robinson. That's the voice you just heard a moment ago. And of course, we're going to be having both of these wonderful scholars on the entire hour today. William Robinson is a professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, has 8 books now. Global Capitalism and the Crisis of Humanity is one of those books. The newest is Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism. And we are using as a kickoff here for today's discussion a new article that William Robinson just had published in the journal Science and Society called Global Capitalist Crisis and 21st Century Fascism. We'll continue this conversation after this musical break. Stay with us.
Together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are joined by two sociologists, William Robinson from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and also Dr. Peter Phillips. He is professor of sociology and political sociology at Sonoma State University. William Robinson wrote the foreword and introduction to Peter Phillips' Giants, the Global Power Elite. That's Peter Phillips' most recent book. The most recent book that William Robinson has is called Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capital. From Haymarket Books. So before the break, we were getting into this differentiation in terms of what 21st century fascism looks like in transnational capitalism. Peter Phillips, you wanted to jump in here.
Well, I'd like to say I recently reread William's Science of Society article, Global Capital of the 21st Century, Beyond the Trump Hype. And it was quite clear to me that what we're talking about fascism, we talk about Germany and Italy and Spain back World War II time, is very different today. And that the countries today, it's not nationalistic fascism, although there may be a lot of nationalism implied in that. It is very much a centralized capital, global capital, that is the primary driving force in terms of power in the world today. And that's part of what the Giants, the Global Power Elite book was about, was identifying particularly almost 300 plus people who are the core of central capitalism in the world. And they're the managers of the giant investment management companies that have over $40 trillion worth of capital that they control. And it's closer to $50 trillion. So it's less than a couple hundred people. And they are in a policy process of making recommendations to governments, to intelligence agencies, and the military for what policies and what actions need to be taken in support of global capital, because they need to continue to have opportunities to invest global capital and get a return. And they have so much money that they don't have good places to put it all. So they buy up the commons. War helps spend some money. And then the biggest thing is they want is investment opportunities. So that has a lot to do with our policy, let's say, towards Venezuela. The boycotting and the blockade of Venezuela, the undermining of the Maduro government, all the lies in the corporate media about that country, the recognition of an alternative president, so to speak. And what we see lining up in support of that are the central capital countries, U.S., Canada, England, Germany, France, and the rest of the world, Africa, Southeast Asia, nobody's lining up against Maduro. Could you comment a little bit on this, William? Is there a new imperialism that's emerging that's centralized based in terms of concentrated capital wealth?
Several points on that. I think your analysis is critically important, Peter, because imperialism is historically, it's a critical category to understand what's going on in the world and to understand world capitalism. But now people are throwing around the term imperialism within the framework of what took place in the 20th century, seeing imperialism as a nation-state project and imperialism as rival national capitalist classes competing with one another. So rivalry between the United States, Europe, and China, and Japan, and so forth. And that's really not what's taking place. And you make that crystal clear in your book, Giants, but also in your initial articles on the new global imperialism, that what we mean by imperialism now in the 21st century is that transnational capitalist class, global capital, is conducting what we understand to be imperialism in the interest of globalized capital. That's really critically important to understand, because we can't fight what we don't understand. So let's link this to Venezuela for a moment. And it's obviously the U.S. is leading this campaign to overthrow the Venezuelan revolution. It's been doing so for close to 20 years now. This is the 20-year anniversary of the election of Hugo Chavez in 1999. But the campaign against Venezuela is just really the spearhead of the larger transnational corporate U.S.-led assault against the left throughout Latin America. And once again, I want to tie this to the point you're making about opening up, violently opening up space for the expansion of transnational corporate capital. Because what we see is that the leftist governments, even though they cooperated with transnational corporations, that's another story, they did not simply turn over the entire resources of the region wholesale to transnational capital. And they had to be pushed back. And Venezuela is really the front line of that campaign. So it is no surprise that Guaido, Guaido, this, you know, this fake leader of the opposition, which has been recognized by the United States, by Europe, by the core countries, the Western countries, as the so-called president, interim president of Venezuela, that he has already announced that should he come to power, he's going to reach agreement with the International Monetary Fund, which, as we know, the International Monetary Fund is intended to lend money with the conditionality that each country opens up its resources and its labor to the plunder of transnational corporate capital. Secondly, he has announced that he's going to immediately reverse the nationalization of oil and turn it over to the private global oil corporations. So what you're saying is spot on with regard to the new global imperialism. I would only not so much differ with you, but point out at a more subtle level, we need to be careful about one thing. It is true that the Western states, particularly Europe and the United States, is in charge of pushing forth global imperialism. But we do want to see that also there are clusters of the transnational capitalist class all over the world, in India, in China, in West Africa, in Southern Africa, in the Middle East, throughout Latin America. And these clusters, they're not necessarily openly calling for the overthrow of the Venezuelan government, but those transnational capitalist class clusters are invested in the same 17 global financial conglomerates that you document so well in Giant. So in a sense, it's really the whole transnational capitalist class disproportionately located in the Western countries, but throughout the whole world, that is behind this global imperialism.
I think there's one thing that's important to recognize, too, is how this transnational capitalist class engages in policymaking, engages in giving direction to government. And that's part of what we talk about. There's groups like the Atlantic Council, the Council of 30, and the Trilateral Commission that are private, non-governmental funded, that are private organizations that have great influence in terms of policymaking worldwide. So if the Council of 30 tells the World Bank this is what they recommend, the World Bank sees that as instruction, the direction of where they need to go. And I think you're correct in saying that there are global elites part of this Western capital concentration from all over the world. Yes, they are. And increasingly, there's some interpenetration between Chinese billionaires and this capital group. And we're starting to see some of that. What was interesting to me as we looked at the Bilderberg meetings are this weekend, May 30th to June 2nd in Montreux, Switzerland. And they just did a press release. There's 130 people that they've identified as planning to attend, including Jared Kushner. But the 130, 18 of them are listed in the Global Power Elite book. So I thought that was a very serious overlap of people that are controlling global capital that are going to be at the Bilderberg group, which is a very small meeting, 130 people concentrated with powerful folks.
These people are meeting and they talk about what to do with the transnational capital that they're sitting on, they're accumulating. You mentioned something in your recent article that couples with something that we were talking about earlier. And this dovetails with the top censored story from last year in Censored 2019 book was global decline in the rule of law as basic human rights diminish. And I was thinking about that because when I was reading your recent article on 21st century fascism, you talk about digitalization. And that's something that these folks, wherever they are in Davos, whenever they come out to the Bohemian Grove, when they meet with the G20, when they meet with other global capital elite characters, this is one of the challenges, right? Because you write about digitalization is replacing labor, right? Technology is replacing labor, pushing costs down. And that means that the rate of profit decreases. You write about this in your article. And you go on to say the transnational elites are deeply divided on how to respond to the crisis that's being created as a result of, well, their very policies.
Absolutely. And there's some critical issues to respond to what you and Peter have just raised. Let me start, though, by backtracking just a bit to say that in Peter's book, Giants, there's an incredible quote. I don't remember what page it would be on, but he's describing this relationship that he just laid out in his comments between the transnational capitalist class and states and governments. And he's describing some representative of the capitalist class saying Trump is merely the pilot flying our plane.
So that was Jamie Dimon.
That quote is so revealing of the point you're making, Peter, that it is the transnational capitalist class is in the driver's seat, and they operate through these private transnational organizations, such as the Bilderberg Group, in order to tell governments and states and their political agents what they're going to do. And there's something very important here also, because when you ask where we're going, I'm going to get to that in a moment, but there's also the increase in international tensions. Part of that is, and most people think it's all just competition among nation states. That's only a small part. The bigger thing here is, I just read an article in The Economist, and it said that the country that has the most women billionaires is China. The 72 women billionaires in the world, 50 of them are in China. The article, of course, is saying that's a wonderful advance for women. That's a lot of nonsense. But the point I want to get at here is there's 72 billionaires, 50 in China. And yet, as transnational capitalist class pops up all over the world, they're not equally represented in the post-World War II international political organizations. And they're not equally represented in these private transnational organizations. So that is a point of tension. But a point of tension on those from above, the ruling groups. But now let me turn to this other issue, digitalization, and the split that this current crisis is imposing on the ruling groups. We've been talking about the project of 21st century fascism, but there's also a global reformist project. Increasing sectors among the transnational elite are worried that this global crisis, that increasing inequalities, that social tensions, the rise of fascism, is going to bring capitalism crashing in on itself. So their reform project is to save capitalism from itself by some mildly reformist and redistributive measures, including more of a green capitalism, taxing corporations and the rich. All of that would be wonderful, but the global reformist elite is quite weak relative to the more fascist-oriented elite. So what's going on with digitalization is that it is aggravating this crisis at all levels. It is actually reducing the rate of profits and therefore increasing the need for a global imperialism to open up new opportunities for profit-making. But secondly, it's expanding the ranks of surplus humanity. The more the ranks of surplus humanity are expanded, the more the system needs violent, coercive control over their rebellion. And not only is it those that have been thrown out of the global economy, the surplus humanity, but even the social base for capitalism, which are more privileged sectors of the working class, but also particularly cognitive labor. The big analysis a few decades ago was that the global economy was going to divide the workforce into two groups: those that are high skilled, high income, cognitive labor, working with computers, knowledge workers, and then the rest of the mass. But now even the knowledge workers, even the cognitive laborers worldwide, several hundred millions around the world, are being made redundant or simply being de-skilled by digitalization. So even they will join the ranks of the excluded. So again, this is wide open. We're at a moment of transition towards what we don't know. And it's at this time really that I keep on emphasizing this, but I want to reiterate it. The left and progressive forces need to move more forcefully onto the offensive. And this is the time in which our political agency can intervene. One quick other point. Socialism is becoming more and more popular. Our listeners will be familiar with this piece of data that those in the United States between 18 and 24 years old, out of those, 61% now view socialism favorably. And millennials, over 50% view it favorably. So we do have this polarization, and we do have the rise of a socialist consciousness. Trump, you'll remember in his 2019 State of the Union address, I believe it was in February, he said famously, the U.S. will never be a socialist country. He'd have no reason to say that if he and the ruling groups were not taking notice of the increasing popularity of socialism. So we need to talk about that as well.
We're speaking now with William I. Robinson. He is professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, author of numerous books, including most recently out on Haymarket Books from earlier this year, Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism. He's also author of an article in Science and Society from April 2019 called Global Capitalist Crisis and 21st Century Fascism Beyond the Trump Hype. We're also joined by Dr. Peter Phillips, professor of sociology, political sociology specifically, at Sonoma State University. He is author most recently of Giants, The Global Power Elite, and William I. Robinson wrote the introduction to that book. After this musical break, we're going to continue our conversation with our two political sociologists, and we'll continue analyzing the transnational capitalist class. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are joined by Dr. William I. Robinson. He is a professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, author of numerous books, including Global Capitalism and the Crisis of Humanity, as well as most recently, Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism. You can find out about that at haymarketbooks.org. We're also joined by Dr. Peter Phillips, political sociologist from Sonoma State University. Of course, Project Censored folks know that Peter was director of Project Censored, did 14 Project Censored books, and of course, I did several with him. Peter and I also founded this radio program back in 2010 at KPFA in Berkeley, California, and we're on about 50 stations now around the U.S. Peter no longer co-hosting. Chase Palmieri is our co-host now, but Peter's back because he is working on a new book, and of course, William Robinson, who's also with us, has another book in line, and maybe he'll talk to us a little bit about that. It won't be out till next year. But Peter Phillips is also working on a new book as a follow-up to Giants. And William Robinson, before the break, you were talking about some what seemed like more hopeful trends, and so countering some of the 21st century fascism and the transnational capitalist class domination, the decline of rule of law, there's also pushback. There's pushback, and you mentioned that among young people in particular, socialism was something that was very interesting to them. Peter Phillips, in your book, Giants, you have Facing the Juggernaut, Democracy, Movements, and Resistance. So both you, William Robinson, and you, Peter Phillips, see that there's another way out of this. This doesn't have to keep spiraling down dystopically. So Peter Phillips, start us out here, and then William, you jump in.
Well, I think the strategy of democratic pressure movements against global elite and capital is vital, and it has to happen around the world and can happen in a variety of ways with a number of social movements. I strongly support the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a foundational moral document. But having said that, I think we see resistance occurring too. I mean, the power elites in the U.S., and I take this hint from my study of the Bohemian Grove and some of the lectures that are given there and that kind of stuff, they don't trust the masses. They don't trust democracy. At least they don't trust voting as a way to make good decisions. They really question that. And I think that's a really important thing to understand, that movements will have to be beyond just electoral politics. They're going to have to be general strikes and massive civil disobedience and unrest to really pressure elites, to divide elites, the power elite, into those that want to make some adjustments and some changes. And not only they lie about trickle-down, because trickle-down doesn't happen, but there needs to be a river of downward capital to the poor people in the world, the 80% of the people who live on $10 a day, and at least some food for the 30,000 people a day who die from starvation. So those are the humanitarian crises that we all need to address and face. So that's extremely important. We just finished looking at 2,400 members of the Bohemian Club, and they have the summer encampment every year where they invite several hundred more guests. 1 out of 10 of those people is a major investment person. They're on one of the 17 boards. They have billion-dollar equity companies, venture capitalists. I mean, it's hugely intermixed there. And then their guests are these people from all over the world that are in investment capital, including the president of Citibank 2 years ago, and Eric Lai from Shanghai Tsinghua Ventures, one of the multi-billion-dollar investment companies in China. Eric Lai gave a keynote at the Bohemian Grove, and he differentiated between the Chinese political method, the Politburo, and how they allowed for capital growth and expansion, and that they were really trying to address humanitarian issues inside the country, but they weren't very democratic. But he said in the U.S. they don't trust the democratic process, and in some ways China was actually better for the world and humanity than what the U.S. was trying to do with our centralized capital control and new fascism.
William Robinson, your thoughts?
Well, following up on what Peter just said, I think what we need to be thinking about is a very broad, we can call it a united front or alliance or a coalition, but one that brings together the elite reformers, those among the transnational elite that recognize that the system is headed towards total catastrophe, with mass social movements and political mobilization from below, of the global working and popular classes. We need to think of that type of a broad coalition, but a couple things to qualify that. First, I agree with Peter that this has to be absolutely beyond electoral politics. We need mass strikes. We need the surplus humanity and the marginalized need to find ways to disrupt the normal functioning of global capitalism and force change on the system. But secondly, also, that raises the question when we talk about an alliance of those among the elite that are willing to reform and this mass mobilization from below, which of those two exercises hegemony or the leadership over this very broad united front? And here, however reform comes about, it's most welcome. But I think we need to struggle for a leftist interpretation of the global crisis and a leftist solution and try and have that vision exercise as much hegemony as possible over the vision of a very broad united front that brings together elite reformers and those from below. And obviously, any type of a reform project, I would love to see socialism, but if we get major reform, that's what we desperately need. Certainly, that involves a redistribution of wealth downward. And it also involves a fundamentally green capitalism. But one thing I'll conclude the comment with is that Samir Amin, who passed away last August, published just a month before he passed away in July 2018, a call for a new international. I think he described it as an international of working classes and peoples. And his point was, and I fully concur with this, and I'm sure Peter would too, is that as capitalism has now globalized, and as the elite and the capitalist classes are now transnational, we need to unite national and regional struggles in a larger global umbrella. So that is something else to think about.
William Robinson, I'm glad you brought that up in terms of these counter-hegemonic movements and the significance of socialism. You mentioned you'd like to see more of that and in income redistribution aimed downward. You write in the end of your recent article in Science and Society, I think a very important critique. You talk about we need a Marxist critique of capitalism at the moment of its globalization. You write, postmodern narratives and identitarian politics can be quite alienating. And in fact, you write, alienated a whole generation of young people in the late 20th and early 21st century. So can you talk about that more specifically and explain what you mean by that remark? I think this is a very important point.
Well, we desperately need the Marxist analysis because the only way to understand this global crisis is through Marxist analysis of the dynamics of capitalism and capital accumulation, which has brought us to the structural dimension of overaccumulation, and out of that spins the political and military dimensions and so forth. So we have to go back to Marx in order to understand what's going on in the world. The problem is that the postmodern narrative rejects Marxism, and it just calls it a grand narrative, an oppressive grand narrative. It might use the language of criticizing capitalism, but it really does not critique or even understand capitalism, and it celebrates, it romanticizes and celebrates endless fragmentation and tiny little spaces of resistance, and then it glorifies these tiny spaces of resistance. And we can't redress this crisis and turn this around if we don't unite all of these different fronts of struggle, all of these different spaces of resistance. And that's antithetical to the notions, the postmodern politics, which is, again, very, very hostile to the Marxist critique and the political economy critique of capitalism. So part of our struggle, we're fighting against global capitalism, but part of that struggle is to move beyond this postmodern identity politics. And, you know, of course, what the postmodernists say is, oh, you don't want to fight racism, you don't want to fight women's oppression. That's absolutely, totally false that we don't want to. On the contrary, that we're identifying how these different systems of oppression, racial, ethnic, gender, and sexual oppression, on the one hand, they are constitutive of capitalism, and the other hand, they are all linked, the reproduction of these forms of oppression are linked to the reproduction of capitalism.
Well, you write too, and I think, again, I agree with this entirely, you talk about the co-optation. You talk about how these kinds of reforms, identity politics, things that are obviously coming from a place of deep social justice, right? But then you talk about how they get co-opted by transnational capitalist interests, political parties. They become pretty faces in government. But by then, the movements are pretty much defanged. There's no teeth left. And the reforms actually just continue newer forms of discrimination. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And if not discrimination, inequality de facto, if not de jure, if not legal. Part of this also is the story of diversity and multiculturalism. That sounds great. Our students love it. I mean, we all are in favor of multiculturalism and diversity. But we want to see how that agenda actually arose from above, not from the masses from below, in the late 20th century. And it was a response to the mass radical and revolutionary movements of the 1960s and 1970s. The system responded with incorporating a portion of the leadership of those mass struggles into the system itself, marginalizing and repressing the rest.
The Extinction Movement, the Occupy Movement, the young people that are leaving the schools, there is a large number of social movements emerging and or have emerged around the world. Some are co-opted, some die. But recognizing that and encouraging those kinds of actions and trying to build a broader perspective with the Extinction Movement that incorporates racism and sexism and class inequality as part of that. I mean, certainly the environment and the destruction of the environment is class oppression. So whatever that analysis as we go along and we find movements that happen, Occupy scared the hell out of the elites. I mean, every police agency in the country infiltrated the local Occupy groups, including here in our area. So that scares them because they can't control it. And it's a threat. So that kind of repression. And we know that some of the activists were protesting private prisons and they were in front of Jamie Dimon's house. He rolled over. J.P. Morgan Chase is withdrawing from investing in private prisons. And then I go, well, okay, fine. Let's get them to withdraw from investing in the military-industrial complex. That ain't going to happen, but we can certainly move in that direction of that kind of protest.
I'd like to remind listeners that you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. We have to take our final break for the hour. We're speaking with sociologist William I. Robinson. He is at the University of California, Santa Barbara. His most recent book is Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism. We are also joined by Peter Phillips, political sociologist at Sonoma State University, author most recently of Giants, The Global Power Elite, and William Robinson wrote the stellar introduction to that volume. It's out on Seven Stories Press. You can learn more about William Robinson's latest book at haymarketbooks.org, and you can learn more about Peter Phillips at either sevenstories.com or projectcensored.org. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. This is the Project Censored Show. After this musical break, we'll conclude our conversation with Peter Phillips and William Robinson. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program for the hour, we've been talking about the global power elite, the transnational capitalist class that Peter Phillips calls giants in his book of the same name. Peter Phillips is with us today in studio. William I. Robinson, professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, is also with us. He joins us by phone, author most recently of Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism, and also author in April of 2019 of an article that you can find in Science and Society, Volume 83, Number 2, Global Capitalist Crisis and 21st Century Fascism Beyond the Trump Hype. And before the break, we were talking a little bit more about that there are movements breaking out. There are people that are pushing back, having resistance. Peter Phillips, at the end of your book, one of the highlights, I think, of the book is that in the end, you actually wrote a letter to the global power elite, and it was signed by some 90 scholars and activists.
We were appealing to global power elite in that we want them to cooperate with social movements and bottom-up democratic processes to change capitalism, to allow a bigger sharing of the global wealth with all people in the world, to reverse the environmental destruction going on. And we acknowledge to them that they're going to have to do that. We say, you're going to have to do it, or we'll be done for you through violent unrest and collapse. So by naming 389 people in this book, we're telling social movements, look, these are the people that you need to talk to. So just the idea that they could go in front of Jamie Dimon's house and get him to withdraw from private prisons means that these people are susceptible and can be talked to and can be addressed in a very real way. And they are the power force in the world.
And this summer, they'll be meeting at the Bohemian Grove. And
a good bunch of them will be there.
In Sonoma County here, right, in Northern California.
Well, they go to Davos in January. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are what I call the intersections of global power. And Davos is another, where these elites all come together very quickly. Bilderberger is a small one. I mean, Davos is a couple, 3,000 people, and so is the Bohemian Grove here. And that's all men. They don't let women come.
Yeah, I think we need to stand outside of the Bohemian Grove with a copy of your book, Peter, and a copy of William Robinson's latest book, and maybe start appealing to some of these people. William Robinson, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a quote here that really brings home what Peter is saying, and it's by Mark Bertolini. He's the CEO of Aetna, which is a $250 billion healthcare company. I don't know if it will make it to the pages of your next book, Peter, but he said in 2017, doing nothing in the current model around capitalism will destroy capitalism. When 65% of people under the age of 35 believe that socialism is a better model, we have a problem. So unless we change it, it will change, and maybe not in a good way. You know, so I think this quote really expresses the concern among some members of the transnational elite that Peter and you are studying, and it opens up the possibility of not just appealing to them, but seeing how to enter into alliance around political programs with them to bring about a major reform of global capitalism. But as Peter mentioned previously, if someone is just tuning in, he said, but to get to that point, we're going to need mass strikes, sit-ins, disrupting the system.
Absolutely. It's not just an appeal to elites. People say they're not going to fix it. And of course they're not. Not without great pressure. And that great pressure will come not only from social movements, but the collapse of their own system through overaccumulation of capital and then the environmental impacts. Either one, doom the system in its current form.
Well, and interestingly, the climate crisis is here. It's not just coming. We're in it. And that's exacerbating tensions around the world. And that has to be something that's clearly on the minds of the transnational capitalist class, the global financial elites. We saw Elon Musk and others talking about colonizing Mars. That seems far-fetched, but that also indicates to us that these people are aware that there is a crisis. And William Robinson, do you think then that there is a wedge, that there is a way to get the foot in the door and meet and talk with some of these people to turn around the climate issue? We're not going to be able to do this unless we do it together. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I don't know if you're in a position to meet with them when you go to the Bohemian Grove, but they read the headlines. They're intelligent people. Trump is not, obviously, but the majority of these transnational elites and transnational capitalists are quite intelligent. They can read the writing on the wall. And as an increasing number of them realize that their own system is going to collapse, they're likely, if pressured from below, to seek the types of reforms that we need. I would also add, though, that the global revolt is really picking up steam. Peter had mentioned Occupy Wall Street, Extinction Rebellion. In the United States, there's the Dakota Access, of course, but it's worldwide. There's the Chilean student.
1, 2.
And asked if I'd be interested. And I humbly and responded with a yes. And that's pretty much how it got started, the conversation.
How long has it taken? What can we expect when we see it?
Just the idea that they could go in front of
Essays on the New Global Capitalism. You had just finished another book that'll be out next year?
Yes. Into the Tempest had one chapter titled Global Police State. And the themes taken up in that chapter is very similar to what Peter's taking up now in his new work, The New Global Imperialism, which is this turn towards a global police state both to contain and control the mass of humanity, the downcast mass of humanity, but also violently and coercively open up space for capitalist expansion in the face of stagnation. And of course, the 21st century fascism is the political face of global police state. So I had one chapter in Into the Tempest on that topic, and now I have finished the manuscript, which expands that into a whole book. But publishing is a slow process. It won't be out until 2020.
Right. So, William Robinson, do you have a website or anywhere that you would like to give out that people can learn more? Of course, haymarketbooks.org has your latest book, Into the Tempest. But is there another place online?
The easiest way, rather than spelling out my webpage, is simply to go to the webpage of the Department of Sociology at the University of California at Santa Barbara, and then click on my name, and that will take you to my webpage. And I have dozens of articles and essays in PDF form on that web page. Anyone can access.
We will be linking that on our website. When we put the show out, we always put links on the show so listeners can go and learn more, and we will absolutely do that for you, William Robinson. And Peter Phillips, last minute here left, you are working on a follow-up to Giants.
We want to show how the transnational capitalist class functions as a class, that they really know each other, they interact. Davos is one example of that, where 3,000 of the top people in the 1,000 largest corporations of the world gather every year, and they're discussing all of these issues there very openly, but it's private, it's elite. They don't invite sociologists to come and observe them. And the Bohemians, I did that 25 years ago, and they're probably not going to let me go there again. What we can do, though, is monitor what's happening there, have insiders give us the information, who's attending. And now we know that 1 out of 10 is a major financialization person, and we're starting to look at who they're inviting there. And this is a way of showing class solidarity of the global 1% of the people. And to be in the 1%, it only takes $750,000 of assets. So, you know, there's millions of people. And then they put their excess money in these giant investment companies that are managed just by a few hundred. So that's kind of how it works. It's this centralized capital getting larger and larger.
That is the voice of Peter Phillips, political sociologist at Sonoma State University. His most recent book is Giants, the Global Power Elite, with an introduction by William I. Robinson, our guest today, whose latest book on Haymarket is Into the Tempest, Essays on the New Global Capitalism. You can learn more about his work, of course, at ucsb.edu. That's the website for the University of California, Santa Barbara. And William Robinson is professor of sociology. So if you want to learn more, you can go under academics, go to the sociology department, and you can find links to a lot of William Robinson's books. And we will be sure to post those linked to this interview when it goes up at projectcensored.org. William Robinson, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very much looking forward to having you back on later in the year, or perhaps earlier next, as soon as your next book is out.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It was a pleasure. Peter Phillips, as always, thank you for joining us once again today.
It's great to be back, and thank you so much.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cars that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a...
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. I am currently the executive producer and host of the program. Our co-host is Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. The Project Censored Show airs on about 50 stations around the United States, from Maui to New England. To learn more about our work and find any of our previous archived programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored Show on your phone's podcast application. Please feel free to share your feedback about our work through our website at projectcensored.org. Last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. See you next time. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens, and the times for the master thief can find and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love. We got the love of lift our brothers and our sisters. We want the people together.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Up next is Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration